Welcome to Pentagon Solutions on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Here's your host, Tom Temin.
The Navy is overhauling the way it trains its sailors. It's incorporating more virtual environments and distance learning so sailors can eventually get the training they need and not spend long periods away from their duty stations. It's all part of the long-term effort known as Sailor 2025. Joining me with an update on this effort, Captain Bill McKinley, commanding officer of the Center for Surface Combat Systems. Captain McKinley, good to have you on.
It's great to be here. Thank you for having me on the program and giving me a chance to talk about this.
So give us the big picture of what is going on. What is the Navy after here long-term?
Well, long-term, Sailor 2025, really Ready Relevant Learning is the training part of that. Ready Relevant Learning is attempting to do a few things. The first of which is to move training to a waterfront environment so that sailors have access to training in fleet concentration areas closer to their ship. The second focus of Ready Relevant Learning is to provide the training at a more relevant time in a sailor's career so that they remember it. Skills don't atrophy from training that was provided before they ever get to the ship. And they also have more context for utilization of the training. The third pillar is utilization of modern training devices, modern training techniques. Virtual world technology, falls within the realm of that. But really, those modern training techniques just support the first two goals that I outlined.
Now, right now, your area, the Center for Surface Combat Systems, is working with the Surface Warfare Division and the Surface and Expeditionary Warfare Training Committee on some initiatives at this moment. Tell us what those are all about.
Yes, we have a great relationship with both those organizations, and we are working with those organizations to develop those training techniques and really to invest in them to provide the tools to move in the direction that that is outlined by Ready Relevant Learning. So we are specifically working with those organizations to find the investments to enable the technology that's required to move into a ready relevant world. Virtual world technology is one of the pillars. What virtual world does is it uses advanced media techniques and technologies to put sailors in an interactive world where they can be trained utilizing and interacting with modern 3D graphics technology. In some of these virtual environments, the instructors do not have to be co-located with the students. And this gets back to one of the goals of Sailor 2025 and Ready Relevant Learning is having sailors at the waterfront, having the instructors and subject matter experts someplace else, sometimes located not even on the same coast, and providing instructions to the sailors in this interactive multimedia world.
Because some of the things that you're teaching are not just book learning, but aren't they also kinetic activities that might be operating fire systems and other shipboard operations where you need that 3D environment to be able to really get people to understand what they're trying to do?
Absolutely. And this is, if you look at this technology, we've been able to model a 3D world that is the ship environment. So when you walk around in some of this virtual technology, you're actually walking on a destroyer. You are walking as an avatar through the destroyer, and then the instructor is another avatar, and the student and the instructor, these avatars, they interact in a virtual world. But that virtual world is a very high fidelity replication of the shipboard environment.
So you can even bump your head, maybe.
I'm not sure if we have the simulation down to the point where you can hit your head on an overhead or take out your knee on a knee knocker, but it's pretty darn good, in terms of the simulation.
We're speaking with Captain Bill McKinley, commanding officer of the Center for Surface Combat Systems. And what about teaching gunnery, the operation of large-scale weapons that are aboard ships, which I should also, I guess, ask is if that's an expensive operation, and maybe there's a cost savings if some of the basics could be conveyed in a digital format?
Well, there's a constant evaluation and trade-off about what training is appropriate for what skill set. And so not everything is applicable or optimal in the virtual world. What we have found is virtual world techniques are optimal for ideas and concepts that would be our best conveyed if you can use virtualization technology to give you a 3D representation of what's actually going on. An example would be a sonar technician in the 3D world is actually able to disappear into the water column and swim alongside the sound waves associated with the topic that he's being taught. That same virtual world it's a lot harder to get your hands around maintenance training, where we're actually trying to teach a sailor how to troubleshoot a circuit board and actually dive into a piece of equipment. So bottom line is every learning objective has to be evaluated on individual basis in terms of what's appropriate to be virtualized and what the best methodology. Your specific question about gunnery, you could virtualize some portion of gunnery training, but this is just an old SWO speaking here, surface warfare officer. You cannot and should not do away with the actual live piece of it too, because there's some things that can't be replicated.
We mentioned bumping our heads earlier. I guess the kick is also something that would be hard to simulate too.
Exactly, and there are. Virtualization technologies that have been developed that are being tested and looked at for guns, the kick can be simulated with air pressure, so you can actually get a lot of bang for the buck for simulations, but you're always doing that cost benefit analysis. When are you spending more money to produce an effective, realistic simulation than you would be if you just fired the bullet out of the end of the gun? That's a constant business case analysis as we go through this simulation and virtual world exploration that is ongoing that we always have to look at.
So getting back to the current cooperation that you have going on with these other areas, what will the outcomes be in the short term?
Well, in the short term, we will continue to develop and test courses like TACTO, and TACTO's becoming Advanced Network Technician, or ANT, just changed the name of it, but it doesn't really change the focus. Because what we're doing with those courses is putting them in the virtual world, and then then evaluating the results in a holistic, rigorous manner, and then seeing where we need to make course adjustments. And that way, we will then pick other courses to virtualize, and we'll continue to move down this field. We feed that into the Surface Expeditionary Warfare Training Committee process, because that's the process that we use to fund the investments necessary to get to, a virtual world. That's a long-term process. So I am, as a training command, we are virtualizing courses one, two at a time, measuring the results, utilizing that to quantify the investments that we need, and then feeding that back to the SWTSI process, the Surface Expeditionary Warfare Training Committee.
So you do have a way of evaluating the learning that is received by the sailors in both environments, you know, the traditional way and the new way, to see how it comes out?
Absolutely. And, you know, every time we go into one of these courses that we virtualize, we make sure we understand the metrics that we're going to utilize to assess the results. And usually that is a comparison between and it's, you know, it's obvious, you know, one obvious comparison is the scores of the exams that the sailors are given at the end of their courses of instruction. You know, sailors' courses are just like any other collegiate course. There's always a test at the end where, you know, pass, fail, whether you measure whether they successfully completed the course or not. Those same test results are given to the students who took the virtual version of the course versus the students who took the brick-and-mortar legacy versions of the course, and then they're compared. And, you know, that's the most obvious comparison metric that we have.
Captain Bill McKinley is commanding officer of the Center for Surface Combat Systems. Thanks so much for joining me.
It's been my pleasure, and I really appreciate the chance to talk about this training transformation effort. It's critical, you know, to the future and the way that we train our sailors going forward.
All right. Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click Share with Friends. I'm Tom Temin.
You're listening to Pentagon Solutions on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Now here's your host, Tom Temin.
The Pentagon's third offset strategy is a way of restoring the competitive edge of U.S. military that it's had for decades, but DoD leadership might be going about it all the wrong way, seeking technology that's divorced from real-world warfighting needs. Dr. Dan Garay is vice president at military think tank Lexington Institute. He joins me with why one of the armed services is doing a better job at pursuing an offset strategy. Dan, good to have you back.
Thank you very much.
And so you have looked at the Marine Corps in particular and said that it's doing a better job maybe of getting its third offset strategy than DoD suits are. First of all, what's wrong with the way they're going about it at the Pentagon level?
Really, the Pentagon is looking too high up and too far away. Advanced technologies, robotics, autonomy, man-machine, connectivity, big data, all these wonderful fancy buzzwords. When the reality is that these offsets or advances in military technology have to be related to military capabilities, to the way militaries are organized and operate. So there's a huge distinction between fancy widgets and what actually happens when the boom is lowered.
Because in the last offset strategy, the one they cite so often, it was technologies that were applied maybe to existing platforms like stealth, because there were already airplanes, and so if you painted them differently and so forth, then they couldn't be seen. Is that kind of what you mean?
To a certain extent. What you find is you get new technologies that you give to existing units, the current soldiers, Marines, airmen and women. They play with them. They figure out things to do. They ask for changes. Then they test them and play with them in different ways. They create new concepts of operations. That then leads to actually new military organizations, in fact. And we've seen that happen over and over again. It's not just the technologies. It's the people, the organizations, and the way you use them. And you can get a lot more out of small changes in technology with clever adaptation that empowers military forces than you can with gee whiz, ultra, you know, high-speed stuff that is difficult to use, complex for the soldiers, or cost phenomenal.
And so far, all of these trips to Silicon Valley and the DIUX and so forth hasn't really come up with anything concrete yet, correct?
Nothing so much really concrete, a few things, and nothing decisive. Nothing that you can really say is, boy, I'm getting a real extra bang for my buck, if you want to call it that, out of making this change.
All right, so let's go to the Marine Corps, and you have cited in your latest blog several initiatives they have going to bring real offset strategy to technologies and platforms they're already operating. Let's talk about the Osprey.
Sure, the great thing. I mean, remember all the negative things about the V-22 Osprey? The Marines have been using it in Iraq and Afghanistan now for years. It is tremendous. It gives you extreme range, so you can now reach out extremely far to conduct operations in the dark. You can refuel it off of a Marine Corps KC-130 tankers. So we're now operating them out of bases in the Mediterranean and reaching into basically the middle of Africa. So the new aircraft, using them in kind of an older-fashioned way as transport, teaming them up with tankers, and suddenly you're dropping Marines halfway across the continent. The next step in this, so they're now designing forces. They call them Special Purpose MAGTAF, Marine Air Ground Task Force, that they don't even operate off of ships. They operate them off of land bases to supplement that. That's technology, concepts of operations, new ways of doing business, and it is extending their reach fabulously. Next thing is they're going to arm the V-22, and then beyond that, they're figuring out how to get light vehicles, ultralight vehicles, that will be carried by these V-22s, so when the Marines land, they'll actually have land mobility. So you can see how this thing is just evolving.
And maybe one advantage to updating the Osprey in that way is that most of the development costs are sunk already.
That's right. I mean, you're not asking it to do everything. You're not piling on every gadget you've got on it. Better communications here, better night vision there. But you're really exploiting the unique features of it in ways to empower the unit that operate it, to give yourself additional operational and even strategic value. And that's the key to offset.
We're speaking with Dr. Dan Garay, Vice President at the Lexington Institute. And you also cite a way in which the F-35, of all things, might become part of the Marine Corps offset.
Well, let's remember, the Marine Corps has actually got operational with the F-35B, the STOVL, short takeoff, vertical landing version of it. They're the first service to actually have them up in operation. Air Force will have their version later this year. And the real key here is not simply the combat power, the ability to drop bombs or engage in air-to-air warfare, but it's to use these things as an invisible sensor in the air so that you can inform the rest of the battle group, the rest of the Marine attack force, the Navy with its carriers sitting offshore, what's going on the ground, in the air, in enemy airspace, and maneuver your forces accordingly. So in a sense, it's like having a God's eye view of the battlefield. It's like turning a battle space into an electronic war game where you see the enemy and they don't see you.
But if you had said, say, 15 years ago, what we'd like to have is a God's eye view in the sky to do all of these things, would you have started out by saying something like the F-35 is the ideal way to do it?
Absolutely not. We have invented a specialized set of platforms. In fact, we were trying to do it under Don Rumsfeld in the Transformation Strategy, trying to do it from space. We were going to have a space-based radar that was going to do this. We wouldn't need to do it with manned platforms. Here we are doing it with a tactical fighter. But it works. These airplanes are connected. They can not only see things, but they can pass data around. It is, in fact, exactly the way to do it. And you get all the multiplier effects of seeing the other guy. You know, I was told by some Marine aviators that when they do exercises now, they don't send their regular airplane up against the F-35 in exercises because it's too demoralizing. It ends up, 15-0 casualty. And I've heard the same thing from the Air Force out at their test ranges. So you've got that aspect of it, which is transformational. You've got the information piece of it, which is transformational. There's an electronic warfare piece that is transformational. And you now take that and build it into your strategy. So that short-range F-35B may be the leading sensor for an entire Navy, Marine Corps, expeditionary attack force heading into the South China Sea.
And perhaps the next step in that particular platform is to send it up without a pilot.
Yeah, if you send it up without a pilot, that's not beyond the realm of, or you mix it. You'll have it with a pilot, and he'll have the ability to control some very stealthy drone that will be out even farther ahead. And you'll mix it. It won't be a combat aircraft in the traditional sense. It will be a command and control and sensor node.
And let me ask you this then, if these types of developments are obvious to you and you can write about them, are they obvious to the Pentagon brass and maybe they can take some of these lessons and bake them into their third offset the official third offset strategy?
Well, in fairness, I mean, it is recognized certainly in the military and to a certain extent within the Pentagon, the Pentagon brass. The problem is that's sort of, in one sense, yesterday's news, except to people who don't watch this kind of stuff. They're looking for grand new ideas, grand new technologies. And of course, that wasn't the way it came about the last time. I mean, it wasn't that somebody came running down the corridor of the Pentagon going, yelling stealth and waving a piece of paper and, you know, the answer to all my problems. It was built piece by piece, program by program, weapon by weapon, GPS and sensors and all the rest, and built it effectively from the bottom up. And that's what you're seeing happen again.
As opposed to the what you call the alchemy approach, where they want to just conjure up something that is instant offset.
That's right. Instant offset and eureka. We have it. Well, if you go back and look at and remember the history of our first offset and second offset, the first being nuclear weapons, boy, did we go through a lot of angst. How do you build them? How do you launch them? How do you, you know, keep it from blowing up the entire world? How big is enough? How do you secure weapons? On and on and on and on. And we're just at the first stage of trying to do that in this third offset. And it's not as much about technology as it is about people, organizations, and the way you use things.
Dr. Dan Garay is Vice President at the Military and Policy Think Tank Lexington Institute. Thanks so much for joining me.
My pleasure.
Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click Share with Friends. I'm Tom Temin.
You've been listening to Pentagon Solutions. Download this show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Search Pentagon Solutions.